my name is Madison Lintz. I played Sophia in The Walking Dead, and you're listening to The Walking Dead Girl.
Hello, everybody. This is Jasmine.
And I'm Michael.
And I'm The Walking Dead Girl. You're listening to The Walking Dead Girl, episode 125. In this podcast, we review and discuss the hit TV show, The Walking Dead, from AMC. In addition to reviewing the show, we play listener feedback, so join the conversation.
And if you want to give us feedback, you can send email to talkback@thewalkingdeadgirl.com. Go to our website, thewalkingdeadgirl.com/voicemail, to leave a voicemail feedback, and we might send you a Walking Dead Girl t-shirt. And you can also post a comment on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thewalkingdeadgirlpodcast, and we'll play your feedback on the show.
Before we get started, I want to remind you guys that we'll be discussing every gory detail about the TV show, so obviously there will be spoilers. Make sure you've watched the current episode before listening. This episode is season 7, episode 13, getting closer to the season finale. A fun fact, Dad, you got me tickets to Paley Fest in Hollywood. And I went on Friday, and most of the cast, not all, but most of the main cast was there.
You were in the same room as Andrew Lincoln?
I know. I freaked out a little bit. I put it on my Snapchat, my reaction when he came out. It's been so long. The last time I saw him in person was in Atlanta, like years ago.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun. It was a little short. Well, it's not short, but what is the point of Paley Fest?
I think it's just a promotional show so they can promote the TV shows and the fans can meet them and stuff like that.
We got an exclusive clip as well for the next episode. Mm-hmm. Or the next couple of episodes, I guess. But there was no dialogue whatsoever. It was just people like going to each other, looking around.
What did you notice of any of the actors?
Rosita's pregnant. When did that happen?
You mean the actress who plays Rosita, which is Christian Serrato's?
Yeah. Like, she's big, too.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Did you know that?
No, I did not. And that probably happened before she was filming, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Because they're starting to write.
That she got pregnant after she was filming. Because
She's dating. I don't know if she's married, but she was dating this guy from a band. I forgot what it was called. There was a pretty popular one. I used to listen to them. Mm-hmm. It was not from 21 Pilots. I'm trying to look it up. Yeah. And so that was pretty exciting to see. She's so pretty.
Who wasn't there?
Michonne wasn't there, Carl wasn't there, and Daryl wasn't there. And it's probably because they're filming or something. But yeah, no, those people weren't there. But Carol was there, and she was sitting next to Rick. And so was Negan wasn't there as well.
Mm-hmm.
But Negan's sidekick, what's his name? The new character.
Dwight. Did they reveal anything? Inside scoop or anything?
No, they never do that kind of stuff. But what they did was they went down the line and the moderator just talked about each character and they just said how much they loved the show and the new things and stuff. And then when they opened it to fan questions, and that was really funny because Rick, Andrew Lincoln is so charismatic and so funny. Someone asked, oh, how would you guys like to die? Rick, if you were to die on the show, how would you like to die? And he went into this elaborate story and like got up and like mimicked everything. It was really funny. And he also, somebody yelled out, Carl, right? And then he's like, he got angry and then he's like, hold me back. Hold me. Who was that? And then he just kept saying it throughout the fest. And it was really funny. Because he knows the meme and he gets it. And it's he pretends that it offends him. Oh, yeah. New Politics was the band that Christian is the guy she's seeing.
Mm-hmm. So did they have...
That's when she debuted her baby bump.
Did they have signing afterwards and stuff like that?
No. I mean, well, it was so weird. These things are so weird. Because before the show started and right before everyone got on stage, announcer was like... And we love them too. We know you love them. We love them too. But please, pretty please, do not rush the stage when it's over. And the minute the moderator was like, All right, thank you everyone for coming. Everyone started rushing to the stage. It was really scary. And then like six security guards came out from the side wings and started like rushing to the edge.
Holding them back.
And I tried to go down to get a closer look, but since I was in the upper part of it, they wouldn't let me go down. They're like, nope, you can't go down this way. You gotta exit. I was like, wow.
So you were on the upper, I wasn't sure what the tickets
were. Yeah, I was in the upper level.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was in the upper level. It wasn't that, not like the upper, like upstairs, but just farther back in the back, like in the mid. It's not that bad.
Yeah. When I got the tickets, all the good seats already sold out. So, I mean, you can get good seats for like the front rows, but they were basically inflated the prices because people buy the tickets and then they sell them online for like triple and quadruple the price, but I'm not going to be paying for that. So I just got the basic like $50 ticket.
They did like a red carpet thing, photo op at the beginning downstairs. It's so interesting to see these things happen and be around it because you see it online the next day where it's on like interviews and like pictures are online. And last night in LA, there was a blah, 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 blah. I was like, I was there or I lived down the street. It's kind of it's nice to know that everything's going on. It makes you feel so close to it. Like, oh my gosh, I'm part of the life. Not really.
Well, this episode of The Walking Dead was one of those self-contained story episodes, which was kind of nice. It had a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Yeah, I would say that.
Because, I mean, it was basically the story about how Richard was trying to start a war.
When Daryl said, why don't you go die for the kingdom?
And Richard,
that's what he wanted to do.
Yeah. So it was the story of that and how that played out. How did you like it?
Well, I didn't like how he died. The kid died. I knew it was coming though. The moment they started paying so much attention to the kid and started suggesting that he might have a girlfriend, I was like, he's dead. He's gonna die.
Benjamin.
He's gonna die.
Yeah, Benjamin.
Yeah, he's gonna die because.
I know that was your favorite character. Well, at least you were rooting for him.
Yeah, I was starting to develop a really good relationship with this character. I was like, okay, he could be, he's pretty good. He's like Morgan's protege. And, you know, Morgan started training his brother and his brother watches on. And, you know, I want to be like your brother. I'm like, from the moment he says, you want to be like your brother, I was like, he's dead. He's dead. He's dead. He's going to die. But the cold open was really short.
It was kind of strange. Like, what is this coming from? Like, what is this melon doing here?
Yeah. And watching it a second time, I noticed there was blood on the deck of the back truck.
And everybody was looking at it
mm-hmm.
as they were coming up to the melon truck. I hate to say that, you know, I told you so, but didn't I say that?
You did.
Benjamin's death is going to be the catalyst for war. To get them moving.
I knew it.
You should have known.
I know. And it makes me so upset because why do the good have to die young? It's not his fault. He didn't do anything. And the thing I was surprised about is Morgan's meltdown. I love that. Mm-hmm. I thought that was awesome. Before he found out it was Richard, his meltdown where he almost tried to kill himself and the meltdown where he killed Richard.
Yeah.
Those were both really good moments. I was like, finally, Morgan's back. Kinda,
and we had a little bit of Carol too.
She realized that she's not gonna be playing stupid anymore, and she knows that the war isn't over,
mm-hmm.
and that they were lying to her, and that's what the first scene was. She wakes up and she's probably having nightmares or she's just thinking about it, and she starts smoking a cigarette. I think she said, God damn it. Cause she's like, God damn it. Now I have to really go and check it out. Cause I'm never going to find peace if I don't find the truth.
Yeah. And she's been probably thinking about this. That's why she couldn't sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And she comes up crying too, which is, you know, maybe she had visions of stuff. Who knows what she's going through? Like similar to what Morgan is going through. Right.
Yeah. I remember we talked about this many times in the past, how they're going to cross each other or they're fated. They're fated to be in each other's lives for a specific reason. They're both on opposite sides of the spectrum of this, where Carol just wants to stop killing altogether, but it maybe is too late. And Morgan needs to start killing. because it's too late to play. It's too late to pretend that you don't have to kill to survive in this world. And it's all, they're all chasing a dying dream, or like a dying philosophy, both of them. So Carol starts leaving and she's walking towards the kingdom. And this is important because she slices a walker on the shoulder, but she didn't kill it. Because like when she comes back, the walker's dead, and she notices this, but she doesn't do anything. There's so many times she could have prevented all of this, but she didn't really know what was going on. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And she goes to the gates and there's like five walkers and she takes them out because it means nothing to her. And Benjamin's impressed.
Well, I mean, it's Carol being Carol, right? She's basically just nonchalantly.
I didn't think much of it.
Yeah.
I just thought this is what you have to do. This is what they do all the time. Mm-hmm. But these people, they're, I guess, not used to that. And they're not that advanced.
Yeah. There's a little bit of symbolism in that she's using the sign that says one way. And she's taking the one way and changing the direction of the sign and saying that she's changing directions. I don't know. There's a lot of hidden messages in this episode, mm-hmm. Hidden meanings and some foreshadowing and stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely.
There was also a scene before this where Morgan is teaching a kid to use a stick, and that kid is Benjamin's brother. Again, some more foreshadowing where Morgan says, you know, we've got a lot to do today. and then Morgan says, you want to knock your brother out? No, you want to be like your brother. And then Morgan says one of the philosophies that he learned from Eastman, where he says, if your feet ain't right, nothing's right. I think that philosophy is like Morgan's philosophy, where he's trying to plant his feet right in the right direction.
Yeah.
Basically, it doesn't matter what the rest of your body is doing. If your feet are not in the right direction, nothing is right. And
I think he's
trying to say that, you know, he wants to keep his mind clear.
Stay grounded and you'll find your way, kind of thing.
Yeah, he wants to make sure he's in the right direction. And that's all of Morgan's philosophy, because he came from a normal, nice person. Then he went a little crazy. And now he's kind of back into peace mode. So he's trying to find a way to survive in this
deal
world.
Deal with all the, yeah. Because remember, we talked about how he was a coward. And I remember in the early stages of our podcast, we were just berating him for how cowardly he was. He just couldn't be the bigger person and kill his wife. And he's the only one that lived and survived in this family because he was too scared to do anything.
Yeah, and we see that come full circle a little bit, because at the end, which we'll talk about eventually, where he talks, instead of saying Benjamin, he says Dwight. He says Dwayne, which is his son's name.
Mm-hmm.
It's as if he's reliving the whole moment again in his life.
Yeah, Benjamin is his son, because Benjamin is close to him now. You know, he taught him everything he knew, and Benjamin looked up to Morgan. Yeah. And that's the saddest thing about his death, is because Benjamin was so eager to learn, yeah. You know, to become better, to be a leader, to do his part. And, you know, Carol kind of ignored Benjamin when he says, hey, can you teach me how you do that? I don't have to go to the drop today. I can miss it. And she, in typical Carol fashion, she said no.
Which saved
his life. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she, it wasn't her fault that he died, yeah. But I mean, yeah. inadvertently, she could have prevented it by just changing the fate, changing the storyline, you know? But you know, who knows? Maybe
it's not meant to be.
If Benjamin wasn't there, maybe that guy would have shot Jerry or somebody, some other innocent person, you know?
I don't care. Benjamin was my favorite out of those people. Man, but you know, things are supposed to happen. They were supposed to happen, I guess.
Yeah.
But before Benjamin talks to Carol, Carol meets up with Morgan, and she says, she starts questioning a lot of things. Like, okay, this things don't add up. Why did Jesus bring everyone to the kingdom if everything's fine? And you have a clip.
Mm-hmm. And this is a little bit of what they talked about.
You wanted me to keep the whole story about you from everybody. Told me not to say where you were, and I did what you asked. They all didn't find you because of me. And what was said between you and him was said between you and him. I will go with you to Alexandria if you want to make the trip. If you want to talk to them. You shouldn't go alone. You found what you wanted, right? You got away from everyone? Is it what you wanted? Or was it just too late to get away?
Yeah, so Morgan is trying to do a hands-off kind of. So it's not, no, I'm not getting involved between this. And you know, I'll take you there, but that's all I'm doing.
I really liked the quote saying, it's too late. You know, you thought you could change, but it's too late. You realize you thought you could deal with being by yourself, but
run away from it.
The damage is done and you're already in too deep. I thought that was, 'cause that's also true for himself as well. Mm-hmm. He's already in too deep, into the apocalypse too deep, and you can't have the same philosophies as you once did. So I really like that interaction.
Yeah. Aww,
poor Carol.
Yeah,
she wants to leave peacefully.
She was crying through the whole thing.
Yeah, because it's true.
It's emotional for her, and she's trying to hold back kind of her feelings about what's going on. So in this scene, we'll note, I made a note that when Carol comes in to meet Morgan, she has blood on her face from killing the walker, the walkers, of course. And we'll see later on when the roles are reversed. It's kind of a mirror. You know, Carol comes to Morgan and says, you know, tell me about this. She has blood on her face. And then at the end, where Morgan comes back and confronts Carol at her apartment complex in the field, in the woods, he has blood on his face, and he's kind of, the roles are a little reversed.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, you asked me, here it is.
Because they crossed again. They crossed paths again.
Yeah, they're kind of always a reflection, I think, of each other.
Yeah.
So when Carol came to Alexandria to see to see Morgan, so she, on her way, she sliced one walker on the shoulder. She for some reason she didn't kill it. I don't know why, but
she doesn't need to. I mean, she just incapitated it.
Yeah,
it wasn't. It doesn't serve the purpose of the story, Dad.
Exactly. She comes back and she notices that the walker was taken out. And she was surprised because, like, well, who else could be around here?
I don't remember doing that. Yeah. And she looks around for a bit. She doesn't really try very hard to.
Who walks on this path? It's obviously either someone from Alexandria or, not Alexandria, I mean, the kingdom, or maybe it's a savior or somebody, right?
Exactly.
Who else is in the, nobody else we know of.
Who else is in the area?
And we noticed that there's a shadow, and there's obviously Richard, who's, in hindsight, you know, as you've seen, when you first watch it, you have no idea what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
But now when you watch it a second time, you realize everything.
Makes complete sense. But yeah, when I first saw it, I was like, what is going on? And I totally forgot about whatever he was doing back there. I didn't even think about it until the end. Like, I was just like, wow, that was that was a stupid, unfinished thing.
Yeah, I didn't connect the dots until I watched it a second time when I saw, you actually see the shopping carts. They're all lined up.
Yeah,
there,
they're
and
all there.
There's the grave that he dug. There's the backpack.
Mm-hmm.
And everything. So it makes sense at that point that Richard set it all up, and I fell for it hook, line, and sinker. No, I
totally.
I didn't fall for it, to be honest, because when they were coming up to it, Richard was acting extremely expressive. Like
he was very animated. First of all, I didn't think he was allowed to be back to the next exchange. Didn't he say, don't come back?
No, they brought him back anyway. They don't listen. but they, he was very like vocal about, hey guys, okay, line up. Oh, this doesn't look good. There's something going on here. We got to be careful. Yeah. Benjamin, raise up your gun. Like
he's too militant, too involved, too eager or something.
Yeah. Like he kind of forceful, but too comfortable in the situation. Like he set it up, right? So I knew something was strange.
I knew something was fishy, and I'm like, I don't like you, get out of here. I was so annoyed by him.
But then when nothing went down, I was like, that's weird, what was that all about? Like, they saw a grave and then they left, so what? Like,
yeah,
you know?
I know I was like, what's the, and then I thought it was really cheesy. He's like, man, this world is screwed up. I'm like, what the heck? This is so out of context. Like,
yeah.
Why would we pass that stage where we're like, oh my gosh, there's evidence that people suffered here from the apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering why they were doing this again, but I had no idea that he made that, made that whole thing.
Yeah.
I don't know why he's so dramatic. Bury me here. Ugh, whatever. I roll. I just really don't like that character. And so, yeah, he goes, they go back to the kingdom, and, well, and everyone's...
Yeah, so here we see Ezekiel. So we see the story...
Looking on with Sheba.
Yeah, it was the story of Ezekiel, basically, at this point. This scene was to kind of get us into the mindset of Ezekiel and see what he's thinking. That garden that went bad is basically his private, you know, private, the king's private garden, I guess.
Yeah, it is.
So they're dipping into the king's private garden to send the cantaloupes away.
And they're really melting it, aren't they?
One of the residents, her name is Nabila.
She's so funny. I love her. She already knew. She was so scared of that tiger. But yeah, she informed everyone that, or Ezekiel, that the crop is infested with weevils. What is weevils?
I guess it's a bug that eats
plants or crops.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that they have to burn all the produce. And she says, don't worry, we'll grow back, and puts in this, which I think is a little much, the writing was terrible. You can tear it, she says, you can tear it out and cut it down, you can burn it and throw it all away, but if you want, it can all grow back.
And of course, that's clearly symbolic.
No, it's like shove it down your throat, symbolic.
Basically, it's kind of referring to the whole thing, because Ezekiel is afraid that... to keep the balance. He wants to keep the balance of everything perfect. Like having this perfect community, this perfect garden. The garden died. It's kind of symbolic. Well, your community can fall apart, but it can come back, right? So I guess what it means to me is like, well, you can go to war and people could die and you'll lose a few people, but in the end, you'll survive and the community will grow
keep
back.
Keep thriving,
will still be there. It's not going to go away.
Exactly.
I think that's what
they're trying to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think that's also helping with Ezekiel. Let him know that yes, we can go into war, but you won't lose the whole you can come back from this.
Yeah.
And I think that's what they were trying to say.
And another message is that no matter how hard Ezekiel tries to keep his garden perfect, bugs will creep in.
Yeah.
And no matter how he tries to shelter everyone in the community and protect it, stuff will happen. Bad things will happen.
No matter what, you have no choice.
And here we see one of the workers carrying out the 12 cantaloupes.
Yeah, and if you want, you could count them. You know there are 12 in there, right?
Yeah, because it was he's carrying the wheelbarrow right in front of the camera.
Right, and it was all perfectly aligned.
In a grid. He didn't like stack them one on top of each other. He just laid them out perfectly. I think they would just want to, because I know a lot of people, they tend to nitpick some things and say, no, there wasn't 12. How are you sure it was 12? What if it wasn't Richard? What if it was someone else? So they said, okay, here, take a picture. It was 12. Okay. Trust me.
Anyway, so Benjamin comes with a quote that he's been reading from Morgan's special little book.
Another foreshadowing that he's going to die.
Yeah, right. And it's to say, and it says to injure someone is to injure oneself. Oh no, I thought it was to injure an opponent is to injure oneself.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and he commented saying you get injured no matter what.
Right.
And Benjamin, another reason why I thought Benjamin was going to die, because he says, I have a gift for you, and gave him a painting. Because they all the characters have a character arc before they die. So their character arc is completed.
Yeah. Well,
it's like the writers feel bad for killing them off, so they give them a slice of happiness.
Yeah, it's also to rub it in our wounds, you know, like, oh, look at this character. He's perfect, but he's going to die.
Yeah, and what do you think this quote means exactly? Like, yes, you get injured no matter what.
Well,
it's just kind of like do unto others what you want done to you.
Point is that, you know, there's no point in war because there's no real winners in the war.
Yeah.
Even if you kill other people, then you're going to lose because you're kind of hurting your own mentality and your own state of mind. And you're losing a little bit of yourself. You're killing a little bit of yourself by killing someone else. I mean, you're never the same.
Yeah, you take a piece of your soul goes with it, kind of thing.
Yeah. And we hear this line again at the end.
Right, before he dies, you know. Yeah. And why do you think he said that at the end?
It's poetic, I guess. But I think it means that, you know, hey, the saviors, it applies to the saviors because they killed Benjamin, but they're actually inflicting pain on themselves by doing that.
Yeah. Oh, okay. He says, don't worry. They're going to pay for this kind of thing.
Yeah, because now, because they killed Benjamin, it's going to start the war, right? The kingdom is going to fight against them.
Yep. So exactly.
That's the price that they pay for killing Benjamin. A little bit of trivia.
Trivia!
That painting that Benjamin gave Morgan.
Yeah, what is that?
It was a painting that they made just for the show. Someone spent 38 hours apparently painting that or something like that.
And I don't even know what it is. Wow.
It's a bullfighter.
Oh, okay. Maybe my screen's too small and I couldn't see it.
But one thing that was strange about it was that there was a zero with a slash through it, like on top of the photo, which I don't know what that meant.
What does that mean?
Yeah, I don't know.
And zero with a slash is what? Nothing? Negative? It's just like no number?
It's like nullify it or kill it or whatever. It's, Ghostbusters, they have that circle with a slash through it.
Yeah.
No bullfighters allowed. I don't know what that meant.
Who knows?
Yeah.
No killing allowed or something.
No bullfighters allowed or something. And then Morgan teases Benjamin about... Oh, you got a girl that made this for you, fixed it up, huh? You got a relationship going on there, buddy? He's like, stop.
And it keeps bugging him about it later on. It kind of like makes it cute. And
I guess we'll never find out.
I thought that also helped. That also gave me the idea that he's going to die. Because I'm like, are we going to see this girl at his funeral or something?
No, I don't think it would
sad.
Pull that.
And after that, they're getting ready for the drop. And Richard and Morgan are looking on as they see Benjamin playing with his younger brother, saying goodbye and stuff. And then for some reason, Richard starts talking about his... I know they're trying to squeeze in his own like character arc and explain why Richard is the way he is, but I don't care, okay? I don't care that Richard had the perfect family and the perfect life, all right? You still... It's kind of like the way... I don't know if it's his acting or the writing, but it came off as that... Richard is constantly trying to defend himself and defend his choices and kind of explain why he's doing what he's doing, which kind of, when you do stuff like that, you don't believe the person's confident in their decisions. You start thinking, okay, why do they have to explain it to me? Are they really trying to explain it to themselves?
Yeah. And I see a lot of parallels between Richard. It's hard to say, well, I see parallels in this person's life and that person. That's because we're all human. We all have families. It's easy to find parallels.
Yeah, all have some backstory in the apocalypse. Okay?
Yeah, I mean, it's so easy to say, hey, well, Richard is mirroring this person or that. Because, I mean, in this conversation, Richard says, yeah, I had a family. And then he asks Morgan, did you have a family? Yep. Morgan nods, he had a family. He doesn't elaborate on it, but...
Because it doesn't matter.
And there's a lot of foreshadowing in this because...
It's like he's saying his goodbyes or something.
Kind of. Because what I'm trying to get at is... One of the main lines that hit, well, he talks about that, hey, you know, we all have to do bad things. And then Richard said, if the day comes when you can't be that good, don't beat yourself up about it. Almost to the point like giving Morgan the go-ahead to kill him.
Without even knowing it.
Yeah, it's like, well, Morgan, if that moment comes where you're going to have to kill me, it's okay.
Yeah.
Don't feel bad about it. You got to do what you got
to
do.
I just thought he said, like, when the day comes where you're going to have to kill someone, don't beat yourself up about it. I thought it meant, like, oh, in the war, if we ever actually fight.
No, that's...
Because he says, like, oh, because he wants to fight.
Yeah, that's what he meant. But I'm interpreting it in a different way, right?
Yeah, now that we know. When he kills him, yeah.
Now that we know the outcome of the story, it's kind of a... it has a double meaning.
Yeah, for sure. Man. And then we had this like little funny scene where Jerry's eating cobbler and like Ezekiel's like, put the cobbler away. He's like, no. And he's like, okay.
I don't know. Jerry, I hope he doesn't die. Well, actually, I don't care about Jerry that much. He's kind of like the cheap laughs.
Yeah, he's like the comic relief.
Sidekick, cheap laughs.
Yeah, so Morgan bugs Benjamin about the girl again. He doesn't say anything, which is kind of cute. And they go to the drop and Ezekiel's backed up, which is something that Richard has planned. He planned to delay the drop, so they're late. That's one thing that'll cause the saviors to get upset by putting a row of shopping carts. and they take the time to search the area and blah, blah, blah. And they have all these, they have like, protect the king, get the kings back. And then that's when Richard starts saying, hey, getting really excited for this. And
we realize after seeing it later that what Richard wanted to do was to hang back and so get them.
Take the cantaloupe and hide it underneath the bucket.
Yeah, it's to kind of catch everyone by surprise that they arrive at the drop zone. It's like, oh, well, we put 12 in there. How come there's 11 now? Like, there's no way they... Because if he would have taken one of them out before they left, they would have realized the problems. Like, hey, how come there's only 11 in the truck?
Yeah, exactly.
So he had to do it in a way that... They knew that the saviors are sticklers about counting and accuracy in the drops. Because every time they stress this, like he would count the boxes and they say, oh, count again. And
yeah, because they want an excuse to scare the people again, their clients and their work, their coworkers, they call them. I want you to work for me.
And then there was a line where they were talking about madness, and it's a wonder we're not all mad. And then when they sang that, the camera cuts to Morgan. Because we know the story of Morgan, that Morgan was mad and he did go crazy.
Yeah.
But now he's back. But they don't know this. Nobody in that community knows Morgan's history.
He doesn't really talk about it. Yeah.
And the handwritten sign kind of reminds us of, you know, Clear and all that stuff, because Morgan was writing stuff.
Yeah, making signs. Kind of. And yeah, so they arrive at the meeting point where the saviors are waiting. And then Gavin, the lead guy, who's such a coward, he's very like passive about everything, says, okay, you're late. And, you know, Ezekiel tries to explain it, doesn't care.
And
Jerry says, don't interrupt the king. And then Jared beats him with a stick.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is he doing?
Again, this leader has a different approach from other bad guys group that we've seen.
Uh-huh.
He's very calm. He's kind of like, okay, let's get on with this. And notice through the whole dialogue, he goes up to the truck and he's just looking at the cantaloupes, but he keeps his back to them the whole time, and he's looking in the opposite direction. He's not even looking at the people he's talking to. Have you noticed that? It was weird, the interaction. He only turns around after he sees Jared shoot Benjamin.
Yeah, it's he turns shot around, the other guy.
He turns around, it's like, what? What just happened? It was weird.
Oh, so stupid. Like, because he's a coward. He doesn't want to watch. He doesn't want to be mean to them. Like, he can't handle it.
Yeah, I don't know.
You can't be part of the saviors if you can't handle being evil.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But yeah, so, and then Benjamin mutters, rat face prick, which Jared hears, which is why maybe he shot him instead.
Yeah, maybe.
He insulted him.
Yeah, Jared is kind of taking example from Negan a little bit. He's kind of using Negan's techniques, I think. Kind of pretending to be Negan, but not really Negan. But
what are you talking about? They're all Negan.
That's true. But I mean, like, his attitude was Negan. You know how Negan turned around and quickly killed Glenn out of nowhere?
Yeah.
Unpredictable. Like, he said, I'm going to kill you, but then he kills Glenn out of nowhere. So I think Jared was kind of pulling one of those Negan moves.
Yeah, Jared's a coward. He's not a coward, but he's just a jerk. He's just meanie. He just doesn't care. He has no conscience whatsoever.
And I think this whole scene where they kill Benjamin and all this stuff is kind of a little bit kind of stretching it, but it's kind of mirroring what the Alexandrian group went through when they kind of went through that crisis.
Yeah, kind of like that's how they punish them, though. Like that's this is their technique. And Alexandria is only getting, the kingdom's only getting a taste of what it could have been.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been more deaths, but I'm just saying, like, this confrontation where one guy got taken out of the group.
And to make a point, to prove a point.
Yeah.
Because he wouldn't let Gavin wouldn't let him go until he said, do you understand what we have to do, what our agreement is? This won't happen again, which is the same thing that Negan says when he kills them.
Yeah.
To prove a point.
One thing that was kind of, it was kind of funny, and it was not funny, but for me it was funny when they says, oh, count the melons, they're not all there, and then Ezekiel says, I don't understand. And then Gavin says, it's possible. It's real. It's happening now.
I know. It's so dramatic.
Like, oh, this is happening. This is happening.
Believe it or not, you screwed up. Oh, that was so funny. Yeah. I didn't make any sense. Why did he say that?
Well, basically saying, this is the moment that we've been talking about all this time where you screw up. You slip up one bit and someone's going to get killed. And up until now, they haven't slipped up.
And, you know, Jared points the gun at Richard. And then Richard makes the mistake of wanting to die, which anybody who's like Jared will like never want to give in to what they want, to what other people want. They always want to do it their own way.
But then Gavin chastises Jared and tells him to return Morgan's fighting stick. Like, give him his fighting stick back.
Like, it's almost like a plot thing. It's a plot device. It's just a reason to get Morgan's stick back. Like, that's all it is.
And then Gavin orders Ezekiel to bring him the 12th cantaloupe the next day.
Mm-hmm. They take their guns too, by the way.
Yeah, another punishment. Another retribution thing. This is a bit of a stretch, but I read on the internet some theories and that the 12 cantaloupes are symbolic, has a religious meaning, because there's 12 disciples to Jesus. The symbolic symbolism here is that one of the cantaloupes is the Judas of the group. So as Richard betrayed his king, then Judas betrayed Jesus.
And
that one cantaloupe missing was the one betraying cantaloupe.
Oh no.
Anyway, that's the religious symbolism in the number 12.
Okay, I can see it.
So that whole thing went down. And of course, when someone gets shot, you can't survive. Like, you can't survive that in the apocalypse.
Well, because he probably got shot, like, and it hit an artery because he was bleeding a lot.
I think the blood that was coming from like his leg or his stomach area or somewhere.
No, it was from his leg. No, oh, okay. He hit an artery. That's what happened. And because that much blood,
yeah,
you can bleed out in minutes, and there was no hope for him whatsoever.
Yeah, because they were squishing the pad on there, and it just
immediately overfilled with blood. It was so gross. And I remember reading one of the sides for an audition, and it was for this medical drama, and it's like a bunch of new doctors working in a hospital called Code Black, which is when there's more patients than there are doctors. So the doctor's like, okay, hold this wound, and he's putting the hand on the wound, and he put his finger in there. He says, you feel that thing that's flopping around trying to get away from you? That's the artery. Hold it and pinch it. That's the only thing that's keeping him from bleeding out. So when you sever an artery, it's like flipping around, like bleeding everywhere. It's like, ugh, so scary. They take Benjamin to Carol's cottage in the woods, and because there's not enough time to get back to the kingdom.
Yeah, she's pretty close. And
they're like, they even say sorry, you know.
Carol knows a thing or two about helping medical conditions.
Yeah, and they just want to, and plus, you know, she's going to help, obviously.
And the symbolism is kind of interesting, where she's planting the seeds, you know, planting there's future, there's hope.
Life
is growing in the ground. Just like Glenn was planting seeds for tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets up and she hears something, and she looks at the sky, and you know, there's the black clouds coming.
Mm-hmm.
Again, symbolic of, oh, dark war or darkness. Bad things are coming. Yeah. Bad things are on the horizon.
Yeah. I wonder if that was a real storm.
I don't know. Maybe it was CGI. I don't know. But it was definitely intended to
put a message across.
So Ezekiel's crew arrives. And they do their best.
But all...
And then Benjamin repeats the quote, it's okay to injure an opponent. Injure an opponent is to injure yourself. Mm-hmm. And we see Benjamin's blood on Carol and Morgan's hands, which is in reference to Richard. He's saying, the blood will be on your hands. On both of your hands.
Richard just wanted someone to die. If it wasn't going to be Carol, it was going to be someone else. And it just happened to be Benjamin.
Yeah.
And Morgan loses it, and he leaves the cabin, and Carol also gets upset because she looks at him after I'm like, oh, man. And Morgan makes it back to the roadblock, and he's just going insane. He's going back to the time, to the clear era.
Yeah, I don't know if
flashbacks.
I don't know if he actually had any suspicions of things, or he just randomly showed up in that area?
No, he randomly showed up in that area, I think, just to go back.
Mm-hmm.
And
he sees his wife in a flashback, his son.
Benjamin.
And then he looks like he's going to kill himself. Cut his slit his wrist.
Yeah, and I have a theory. I don't know if this is true or not, but because it says to injure an opponent is to injure yourself. And so he says maybe he convinced himself in his mind that, okay, because he seemed like he wanted to kill himself because mm-hmm. he was in so much pain. So the fact that Morgan took the step to kill Richard because he knew, and maybe he just convinced himself it's going to hurt me in a way. At least I can do it because it's hurting me as well.
Yeah, I
want to hurt. I want to hurt myself, so I'm hurting someone else.
There's definitely later on where Richard confesses to the cantaloupe incident. Richard says at some point, we'll come to it, but Richard says, if you can't kill, you might as well just kill yourself. He says, if you can't kill somebody, if you can't kill, like, when you have to, like in the war, I guess, mm-hmm. then you might as well just kill yourself. You're as good as dead. And that kind of reflects a little bit on this, too.
Yeah. So Morgan, this scene was good. Morgan confronts, because once Morgan realizes, oh my God, Richard was the one that hid the cantaloupe, he confronts Richard by throwing the bucket into the room. And this is where, again, Richard explains his whole backstory and the reason why he's doing what he's doing. And he dares to say, do you have the clip? Do you want to play it before we continue?
It's not the whole thing, but it's part of the discussion, but I'll play it.
Okay.
Listen to me. Please. Just listen. We can use what's happened. We can show the saviors that we get it. We understand what we need to do. We know how to go on. And they need to believe us. We have to do something to make them believe us. And then, when we gain their trust back, we kill them. End them. We join with Alexandria and the Hilltop, and we crush them in one fell swoop. But this is it, Morgan. You have to kill. Or else, you might as well just kill yourself.
So that's what he says, you might as well kill yourself.
I mean, it's true. You have to kill in order to get in this world. And he says, well, if I'm going to kill, I'm going to kill you. And his thing.
I think that's where it extrapolates to.
Yeah, I know. Because he said, look, we'll follow whatever they have to say. And Morgan's like, I'll take your advice, but I'm going to use you to do it.
Exactly.
Because he repeats exactly what Richard wanted to say to the saviors after he killed them. He said, see, we get it. We understand.
Okay, I'm going to throw something out there. Do you think that killing Richard was kind of a waste? Because I know it had the outcome that eventually we wanted, but the thing is that, yeah, Richard's a little wacko, but he is a fighter, and we need people who are smart and strong in the war.
We don't need radicals, Dad. The world has enough radicals. We don't need radicals.
So
we don't need uncontrollable people. Because even if he was to help in the war, he would also have his own opinions about the war and will disagree with things that people want to do. And he'll go and do his own thing, kind of like Rosita. Yeah, they're on the same page, but the moment that someone doesn't do something that they like, they'll go off and do it on their own. And it's not good for the whole group. You need to disappear.
Because at the end, we saw a hint of that because Richard said that, I'm cool. I'll admit that I did it. And then I'll be paying the price for the rest of my life, making up for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, what happened was he didn't tell anybody. They went to the final drop. And then because Morgan said, hey, by the way, did you tell everyone what you did?
He says, no.
Don't worry about it. We'll talk about it later.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and it kind of reminded me of like a little kid because Morgan didn't say anything. He's just... I thought Morgan should have killed Richard right the first time he confronted him.
Yeah.
He had a lot of restraint for not. And the second time, and I was like, oh, how dare you insult Morgan like that? Like, oh, not now. That's why I feel like he's just talking for talking's sake, because it's all BS.
Yeah.
It's all to convince other people that he's fine.
And then because after he figured out that, oh, he got Morgan on his side and he shut him up and they're going along with his plan.
Yeah.
he's like, okay, well, now I don't need to worry too much about telling everyone because, hey, you know, we're going through with this.
And it's like...
And I guess Morgan concluded, well, maybe Richard will never tell anyone, and then there'll just be another scheme of his, you know?
Yeah, and that's silly to think that Richard that Morgan wouldn't care about the death of Benjamin, who he's really close to. So, no, of course he's going to say something. And, you know, Morgan picks up the stick.
I mean, remember, he was willing to sacrifice Carol.
Yeah.
And then Daryl intervened and said, no, you're not going to injure Carol to start the war. So, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. He's a radical and he's unsafe and he's no good to anyone.
Yeah. So.
No matter how much they agree with the same ideas. But, yeah. So, they left their sticks there, apparently.
I think when they showed the two sticks on the ground, Benjamin's stick and Morgan's stick, and you notice they were all covered in blood and everything.
Yeah.
I think that was symbolic to symbolize Benjamin died, which was Benjamin's stick, and then Morgan actually died there. Like Morgan, the old Morgan died,
mm-hmm.
the peaceful stick Morgan.
Yeah.
They died side by side. because at the end we see, of course, Morgan takes his stick and turns it into something else.
Mm-hmm.
But so that was the punishment. And then, like you said, Morgan says, "Yeah, we get it," and he's repeating Richard's lines. And I have a clip of that scene as well.
Wanted to show you that we get it, that we understand what it is that we need to do, that we know how to go on.
Good. Next week, same time.
We understand. He did this. He wanted to die for us before. He wanted it to be him. Thought he could choose, and that's why Dwayne had to die.
Dwayne?
Benjamin. Benjamin, that's why Benjamin.
Morgan, let us take our leave.
I was supposed to.
Morgan, you should not be alone here.
Go. Not now.
Benjamin
would not. Man, I said not now.
I'll
just go.
I like that part because he's like, man, I said not now. Leave me alone, okay?
Leave me alone. Like, what the hell?
Yo, brother. It's like a black thing.
Yeah, it gets all ghetto.
Yo, bro. I'm telling you, man. I don't know.
Dad, that's your black? That's your black ghetto accent? Mm-hmm. There's little resistance, you said here, that Morgan's strangling Richard to death. And
some people were calling out that scene, like, oh, well, why did no one jump in? And people just standing there watching Morgan kill Richard.
I think they were in shock.
Yeah. And also, I think Ezekiel had a little bit of respect for Morgan anyway, right? I think.
And I mean, I think at the time, Ezekiel's also very upset too, because
he's hearing all this revelation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They heard it after he strangled him, so I don't know. Yeah, because he started explaining the story after he strangled him. Like, well, what?
Yeah, why didn't he say anything? Like, that's weird. Maybe I'm chalking it up to being shocked.
Yeah, I think they were just in shock. So the part of him referring to Benjamin as Dwayne, I think, it was very emotional, I think, because... You know, it just shows how beaten up, still connected and emotional he feels about his loss.
Mm-hmm.
And even though he has gotten over it, he hasn't really gotten over it. I mean, it's still in his head. I mean, he's still thinking about it. He still regrets everything that happened because I think it was his wife that killed his son, right?
Mm-hmm.
His zombie wife that actually killed his son. So
because he couldn't do anything to stop it because he was too scared to kill his wife.
Exactly,
that was already a zombie.
And he's not gonna make that same mistake again. And I think
this moment, that's why he kind of said his name, is because this moment kind of this whole thing resets the button in Morgan's head, saying going back to start, erasing everything that he's learned from that man Eastman or whatever his name is,
mm-hmm.
And. Because it goes back to the fact that, you tried this new philosophy, but still you could not do the one thing you had to do to protect someone that you cared about because you didn't want to kill. Yeah. And so now we're charting, going on going to uncharted territories, trying to figure out who this new Morgan is and who, what will happen when he meets Rick again, you know?
Ezekiel leaves Morgan to his own craziness, and then Morgan drags Richard's body to that open grave, and as he throws him in there and starts burying, he finds the backpack, which we've seen before. It was in his, in the trailer home.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, oh, it's probably his daughter's, Katie's. Because in this episode, Richard goes into detail about, this is kind of interesting, where he was in a huge camp and there's a lot of people there, and he thought, hey,
and he was on the run.
There's experts here. There's others. Someone else will figure out the problem. I don't have to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
Which kind of explains in his head why he's not going to sit back anymore and he's always going to get involved, because he attributes his non-involvement to why his family died.
Yep.
Right? So he's like, so, okay, well, I'm going to get involved now.
Pretty much.
Again, but now there's too so many involved. There's so many parallels here. Like, same with Morgan, right? He didn't get involved and now he's getting involved. And so there's so many, we've seen all of these storylines in play out,
yep,
in different people, right? Again, with Carol, yep, she doesn't want to get involved, but now she's getting involved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all these storylines are kind of intertwined.
Going together, and, yeah.
Repeating themselves.
Yeah, so Morgan goes to see Carol, and he's like, okay, do you want to know what happens in Alexandria?
I'm going to tell you.
He's like, you'll find it. He's like covered in blood, and he's like sad and different. And so Carol's like, what happened to you?
Yeah.
And then Morgan says, I killed Richard. I strangled him. He's the one that got Benjamin killed, so... Whew. And Morgan tells her that Negan killed Glenn and Abraham and everybody, and that's why Jesus brought Rick to Alexandria to help them build up an army to get them.
Well, Morgan says he's going to go out there and kill them one by one, and I think what he's meaning is that I'm going to go into my clear mode. I'm going to start clearing. Like, he's going to start walking. Mm-hmm. Because remember, he used to walk around, and clearing. Basically everybody he saw in his path, whether it was a walker, a human being, whatever, like a non-walker, he would just kill them. No matter what, he was like ruthless like that, right? He didn't care, mm-hmm, if you were a good guy, a bad guy, he would just kill you. And that's why he set up his clear town. And then when Rick showed up, he almost killed Rick, right?
Yeah.
So he was going to go into that mode. He was going to flip the switch and go into that mode. And then Carol kind of stopped him and said, no, don't do that. And she repeats the line that Ezekiel told her, and which was go and no and not go, which means, yeah, basically just stay in my house in this border between.
You don't have to fight. Don't make a choice. But see, not making a choice is a choice.
Yeah. Kind of, I envision now that house symbolizes kind of the limbo state,
yeah,
that people are in, right?
The in-between
state. Mm-hmm. You're not actually involved, and you're not running away either. You're just sitting in this limbo, in this weird state where you're just floating there, right? Not Morgan is living in there now instead of...
Yeah, they switched places.
Basically, I think they're just kind of... That's kind of a... putting Morgan in a kind of a holding pattern. It's like, we don't want you running off and losing you and going crazy. We want to keep you...
Yeah, we'll keep you here.
For the war. We need you for the war.
We'll use your talents now, but like an animal, you know, caged animal.
But just stay in this house, so when we need you, you're ready to go.
Exactly.
Which is kind of interesting. And then Carol goes back to Alexandria, which is her return back to civilization and getting involved again.
And she
again.
Says, okay, we have to fight. And Ezekiel agrees, but obviously he's like, but not today. I'm like, oh, okay. Okay, Ezekiel, we know you just want to make the moves, and Carol.
Yeah, and they're replanting the burnt crops.
Mm-hmm. As you know, everything will grow back.
Yeah, exactly.
And we have Morgan sitting alone on the cottage porch now, whittling the end of his fighting stick into a menacingly sharp point. And
well, that's
an axe
again,
stuck in a pile
again,
of wood.
Again, that's the symbolism of he's taking his peaceful stick and turning it into a war weapon.
A war weapon now.
Weapon of death.
I'm really glad that Morgan's finally turned a new leaf. And I'm also really glad that Carol's also decided to join, because we need everyone. And these are the two most strongest fighters. And we need everyone. And hopefully now we'll see an actual fight by the end of the season.
Yeah, well, that's a good question. Will we see a war at the end of the season? Or will we see a cliffhanger? I don't know. I also like the symbolism behind Morgan, there was a pile of wood, and there was an axe stuck in the wood. And you know that the axe is the favorite tool of the day for Rick now. So,
yep.
I don't know. I just think that that axe symbolizes Rick's mentality that we have to fight. I don't know why Morgan is looking back thinking that he heard something. I don't think there was anything there, but maybe it was just his mind playing tricks on him again.
Maybe, yeah.
Because he's going into this crazy mode.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, he's probably hearing clear in his mind now again.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So that was a self-contained episode, which could have been played in any order. Like, you could have put this episode anywhere, and it would stand alone. It didn't really connect to anything else, right?
Yeah, I agree.
But it was just trying to... what other loose ends do we have? I think we've closed off all loose ends now.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm just waiting for them to start fighting. I'm so over this story build-up thing because I think we know what everyone wants. Okay, we know where everyone stands now.
Yeah, well, we also know where all the guns are. We know where all the people are coming from. There are no other communities that are left in limbo that are not going to be involved. We pretty much have tied up everything. Because even the Oceanside community, we know Tara told Rick about them.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible that we might have another episode where Rick goes to the Oceanside and communicates with them and gets them on board. We possibly could have that. Or we could just assume that, hey, they could just say, yep, we're on board. I doubt it. They're probably going to have a story to explain them coming on board. They have to. I mean, they can't just have them show up and it's like, oh yeah, we agreed. We're going to help. Here we are.
Yeah. That's poor storytelling.
They might, or maybe they'll cut it in with other stuff. But the preview that we saw shows a little bit of Sasha and Rosita.
Mm.
So we might have something to do with Sasha trying to take out Negan.
Like what their next steps are.
Yeah, because they have the guns, right? That they want.
They got the goons.
Yeah, so we might see some of that.
Overall, what did you think of this episode?
I liked it. It was good. It was fun. I mean, it kept me...
entertained.
Kept me on the edge of my seat, I guess, a little bit. It kind of wraps up the Carol and Morgan that, yeah, they're going to get involved. So.
Yep, we have Carol back now.
Which I kind of knew they would do that. They wouldn't leave them not involved.
Yeah.
They just had to figure out how to do it. So let's, do you want to hear some feedback?
Sure, yeah.
So we have a voicemail from KJ, who's been on the show before. He's co-hosted with us, but he had to call in because he liked this episode. So let's hear what he had to say.
I'm so glad to be calling, finally, because I don't like to call when I really hate the episode or when I feel disappointed. And this was definitely the best episode so far of season 7. Carol and Morgan, so glad to see them back. I'm so glad to see them, you know, they're going to be really vicious in a wartime, so I'm looking forward to that. But, of course, you know, dragging it out just a little bit because this Carol and Morgan thing seems to be pretty cyclical. They seem to be going through the same cycles over and over again. And, of course, we have the gun plot getting dragged out and the bullet plot getting dragged out. So, and I'm really going to be disappointed when Sasha misses her shot at Negan. For some reason, they're going to have to figure that out. But, yeah, looking forward to seeing the war come together. But, you know, I really want to see how the Saviors are actually going to be a good operation because they seem to be reaching this economies of scale. They seem to be getting too big and too spread out to actually operate well. Because these Saviors aren't doing so well when they're trying to manage these camps. So let's see how it's going to blow up in season 8. All right, I'll talk to you guys later.
So KJ thinks that the Saviors are getting too big and they're not able to manage things well. I think we saw a little bit
things
of that.
Just slipping through the cracks.
With what the incident that happened in this episode, right?
Yeah.
Where at the end where they had to kill Benjamin and they're kind of out of control. Like they can't.
Even with Dwight and how Dwight was able to get away with using the doctor killing the doctor,
right,
and framing him. No one really did a big investigation. It wasn't anything. It was just word for word. You know.
And then Jared doing things, not following orders and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's small things. Well, I guess they're big things if you kill somebody, but there's not consistency in the group, right? In the Saviors, like little people are doing different things.
Because you're controlling a bunch of crazy people who just want to kill everyone.
Yeah.
They're selfish. It's hard to lead people with no real rules or law or consequences. And the only consequence is death.
Yep. So you want to read some of the Facebook comments we got?
Yeah. Shannon Connolly says, thought, is Morgan done with Jared, the greasy guy that shot Benjamin? At the end of the episode, when Morgan is sitting in the doorway of Carol's house sharpening his staff, he hears a noise and looks back for a moment. Could he have kidnapped Jared and have him in a cell in the house? Just like Eastman?
That would be
interesting. Because then you have to go back to the, or maybe you could have picked him up on the road when he's walking back.
That's true. That would be a twist in the plot that nobody expected. But I don't think Jared is an important...
He tried that with the wolf, remember? Tried keeping him to change him.
Right.
Nah, he's done with Eastman.
I have a feeling that jail is going to be coming back into the plot somehow.
It could be used for Negan.
Maybe, yeah. Jessica Yeager says, I love the transformation of Morgan and Carol in this episode. The gang is coming back to bring justice and revenge for the deaths of all who died at the hands of the saviors. Yep.
Uh-huh. And Dwayne Smith says, no need to step in. Ezekiel knows Morgan and knew there had to be a good reason.
I guess he's talking about why Ezekiel didn't step in to stop Morgan.
Mm-hmm. This had to happen in order for Morgan to let out his rage, his inner demon, if you will. But he needs to realize there is time for pacifism and it is not now. Negan is a killer. His people are killers. Morgan needed to and needs to kill.
Yeah. So he's pretty much turned to, I guess, the dark / good side. We want him to be dark so that he can save everyone and help save everyone. James Wisniewski says, I enjoyed it. Though it made no sense that no one from either side stepped in to help. Yeah, so we talked about that, and we're okay with that. We're okay with accepting that outcome.
Yeah, we're okay to breaking that fourth wall and just deal with it.
We got an email from Sheila Ellison. She wants to comment about the previous episode. She heard our commentary and wanted to jump in and add her thoughts. And I think we said in there that Rick's death was, you know, for the audience to shock us and think that he's dead. But she says Rick's death was for Michonne.
Mm-hmm.
And she says throughout the entire episode, Michonne and Rick were taking the entire trip lightly and confidently. Michonne's been thinking of the future and never put into her mind that Rick might not be there. This was for Michonne's reality check. Notice no commercial break when Rick falls, no cutting to a different storyline. It cuts to Michonne's point of view and her reaction to believing that she just lost her love when she had finally allowed herself to open her heart. The audience knew about the deer. Michonne had no clue. In her mind, it could only be Rick. The audience wasn't the target to be fooled. For the first time, Michonne was forced to realize that Rick could be ripped away from her. By Rick's speech at the end, it's clear that Rick is going into the situation with his eyes open. He knows that he can lose a lot of people he loves. It appears Michonne has not been thinking of that at all. But now she's aware, and hopefully that will make her not react that way, like dropping the sword during the war.
Yeah.
That'll make her stronger, I guess, that, hey, if Rick dies, the war goes on, and I can just keep going. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for the email feedback, Sheila.
Yeah, I really agree with that, too. I really like that. We have trivia.
The boy who played Henry, who plays the brother of Benjamin...
Yeah.
In the show, the little kid. He's actually the real-life brother of Madison Linz.
Who played Sophia.
Who played Sophia. Is the brother of the girl who played Sophia. His name is Max. I think it's spelled...
Maxon.
Mason. Mason. M-A-C-S-E-N.
Mm-hmm.
So Mason Linz. He's the... So that's the connection of old characters to new characters, I guess.
Interesting.
Hopefully Mason won't... Or Henry. Henry won't die.
No, because he hasn't really have his own story.
Yeah, he was...
You don't have any connection to the kid yet.
He was somebody that Ezekiel took care of. Like, he reads...
We always saw him at a distance.
Bedtime stories and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
So, and Madison Linz was... We played her intro at the beginning, and that's why we played it, because it was this connection. So, we only have 3 more episodes left, Jasmine.
That's enough to get in a little a war there. It's enough time to get it going.
Well, as KJ said in his voicemail, Sasha is going to target Negan and then she's going to miss. That's what he thinks. Because obviously if Sasha gets her way and kills Negan, then there's no point in having a war, right?
It's exactly. Over. Which I hope doesn't happen.
So,
who do you think is going to die in this, in the finale?
Based on the fact that some of the actors have other jobs and other shows. You remember?
Oh.
Yeah. So I think Sasha might go because she has another major production that she's working on. So I think Sasha might go. Rosita,
I think so.
Rosita, I don't know. Her character is behaving in a way that kind of implies that she might die, but I don't know.
Maybe like Richard, she's not going to die the way she wants to die, or if at all, because she's so eager to sacrifice herself.
Exactly. She might cost another life again.
Maybe that's the secret to living forever, wanting to die so much. The universe is like, no, you want it too bad.
And then everyone else around you dies.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Sasha might die.
Carol's been on the show too long. Maybe it's time for her to go.
excuse me? What?
Maybe
Morgan? I don't know. No, Morgan still has some stuff to finish up.
I don't know. Everyone's pretty solid.
I mean, they're not going to do anything dramatic because of what happened with Glenn. So.
I have a feeling Dwight's going to get it. I mean, he's not a major character and he's not one of the main characters, but I still feel that his plot line is kind of done, I think. I don't know what else.
He's going to go and disappear with his wife into the forest.
There was hope for him. Like, he could have been a good guy and saved Daryl and turned to help the Alexandrians, but instead he decided to become stay evil and support mm-hmm. Negan. So because of that, I don't like him anymore. There was hope for him, for me to like him, but now I don't like him.
Really? You think so? I still like him.
Because of that, I don't think he's going to last much longer.
I still like him. I think he's funny.
Dwight?
Oh, I thought you meant Eugene.
Oh, not Eugene. I was talking about Dwight.
Oh, I thought you were like, because he changed over. Okay. Well, no, I like Eugene. Like Eugene. I think he's going to survive.
No, I like Eugene too. I don't want Eugene to die. But he's smart, but the thing is, mm-hmm. like, he figures his way to survive without force, without having, strength and, like, guns and physical
he's
strength.
Yeah, he's in his mind, like he always has been in the past.
Right.
Well, we got to figure out if Tara's gonna get that group coming, and if we're gonna get the more weapons for Jadis.
There's enough episode that they can actually pull out a war, to the point where they might even start the war and not end it, really. Because it's not, if you think about this war, it's not going to be like a one...
not after last time.
It's not going to be a short burst where they attack and people die and it's over. It's going to be like mm-hmm. a protracted thing, I think.
Yeah.
With multiple isolated fights. I wish it was, because that way it could last a bit longer.
I wish so, too. I hope so.
Because I don't think they're going to storm that compound. Or maybe they might. Who knows?
Who knows? It's going to take a while, though.
Anybody's guess.
I hate making predictions because I'm always wrong.
Let's not predict.
Because I'll get disappointed. Well, we've come to the end of the show. Thank you all for listening to this episode. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends and everyone you know. We love to get new subscribers. You can send email feedback to talkback@thewalkingdeadgirl.com. And as always, this is Jasmine.
And I'm Michael.
Stay alive.